Get ready to rumble. Shilling Show Unleashed on the Seven Thunders Media Network. Former city councilor, husband, father, and community watchdog. Your host, Rob Shilling.
Welcome to the Shilling Show Unleashed podcast. Remember, your direct support makes our show possible, and you can directly support this podcast by visiting shillingshow.com and then clicking on the Patreon banner at the top of the page to make a monthly contribution. We appreciate your support.
The Shilling Show Unleashed podcast welcomes Catherine Cornell Gorka, terrorism expert, a presidential appointee in the Department of Homeland Security, and co-author along with Mike Gonzalez of the new book, Next Gen Marxism, What It Is and How to Combat It. And Kate Gorka, thanks for joining us today on the Shilling Show Unleashed podcast.
Yeah, so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So I want to start out with some terminology because people oftentimes hear the words Marxism, socialism, communism, and others interchanged. When we talk about Marxism, how are we specifying it from other things?
I would say there are two fundamental aspects of Marxism that are important for our purposes today. It was a whole economic theory, and then that kind of was the basis of socialism and communism. But there was another side to it as well, which was it was kind of a worldview. And it was a worldview that said the world is divided into two irreconcilable camps, the oppressor and the oppressed. Now, in the case of when Marx first wrote this, he believed that the oppressed were the workers. Remember, this is sort of in the early days of industrialization. You had people going into factories. Conditions weren't great. He believed that the workers would rise up against the, quote, bourgeoisie. These would be the people who owned the factories, because the workers would find the conditions untenable. But what he failed to recognize is that actually the workers didn't need to rise up, because capitalism itself kind of solved much of the problem. So over the course of the 1800s, conditions continually improved for the workers. But today, this Marxist concept of a world divided in two, this is kind of what has survived of Marxism, right? Much of socialism has been discredited, but the idea that the world can be divided in two, that's what stays alive today. And that's what we talk about with Next Gen Marxism. Today, the world, as you know, in the United States, of course, is divided between what you might call sort of white heterosexuals on the one hand, including many Asians and Jews. This is the oppressor class. And then the oppressed is anybody who is a different race, ethnicity, or sexual orientation.
You know, it's interesting, Kate, as I was thinking about what you said, that in many ways I look at today's America as the takers and the taken. And I feel like I'm part of the taken. Like we're just getting shaken down here and we have absolutely no power. Is that a divide that we could look at?
Oh, 100%. And I tell you what, it's a divide that absolutely defines Marx himself. If you study Marx's life, he was the biggest taker out there. He was an absolute lowlife. He was a heinous individual. He berated his own mother endlessly to try to get money out of her. He never supported himself. I don't think he ever earned a single penny on his own. He also lived off of his writing partner, Friedrich Engels. And so, you know, in a sense, he built a whole worldview and philosophy out of being a taker. And that is the philosophy of socialism. It's a politics of envy.
How did Marx pull the wool over people's eyes, so to speak? I mean, obviously people had to be willing to accept these theories, which have not proven with the test of time. But what was the way that this was sold to people?
Actually, you know, he didn't, in fact, do a good job of selling it to people. Marxism never took hold in the first 70 years that it existed, never gained widespread traction at all. You know, it was competing all throughout the 1800s. It was competing with other utopian visions. The turning point for Marxism really came with Vladimir Lenin in the Soviet Union. And sorry, before it was the Soviet Union, when it was Tsarist Russia. Lenin developed a formula that allowed Marxism to work. And the formula was this. He said, if you can adequately use propaganda and information to make people believe that they were victimized and that they were suffering as a result of some class, and if you organize them well, you could bring about a revolution. Now, that's what happened in Bolshevik Russia. But again, that model never worked anywhere else. You know, a lot of people don't know this, but both Germany and Italy came very, very close to having big communist takeovers around 1919, 1920. But Marx's ideas failed there as well. And again, what only has sort of kept him alive since then and kept his ideas alive is because people keep changing the narrative. But there was a big shift in the late 50s here in the United States where they said, okay, it's not workers who are going to revolt, it's the students who are going to revolt. Their revolutions failed in the later 60s. Now we're seeing it, this next version of it, which Mike and I called next gen Marxism. But I'm pretty sure that this is going to fail as well, because this is what happens every time, right? It was such a flawed ideology that every time, you know, it might be attractive to people for a while, especially people who want power. But every time you get anywhere close to having it be implemented, it just kind of collapses in on itself.
Well, it feels like at that point it's too late. And this is what we see here in Central Virginia. We're broadcasting out of Charlottesville. And we see people that just want to continue to increase taxes on people to give the government more power, more influence. And there are very few people willing to stand up and even raise a flag against these things. So once it seems like once you get past a certain tipping point that it's all downhill from there.
I hear what you're saying. And, you know, I'm close by. I'm up in Fairfax County, which, you know, your county and my county are about equally blue yes. at this stage. I have kind of a different perspective, which is, yes, you know, I've seen our government here in Fairfax be taken over by tax and spend Democrats. I've seen our school board be taken over by radical progressive Democrats. I've seen our schools gone in a crazy direction. But I'm also seeing people rise up in crazy ways. When I left the Heritage Foundation back in the summer of 2022, I left so that I could write the book with Mike so that I would have the time. But I also said when I left, I'm going to get more involved locally because I realized the problems that we're facing cannot be solved from Washington. They have to be solved in our communities. So I started getting more and more involved with our local Republican committee, you know, door knocking, serving as an election officer, doing all kinds of things to try to help here. And then just a couple of weeks ago, I just got elected as the chair of our Fairfax GOP here in Fairfax. And it's been so eye-opening for me as I've gone through this process to see the hundreds of people who are fired up about what's going on. They're saying this has gone way too far. We're not going to take it. And people are kind of standing up more and more and pushing back. Now, do I think we've reached a tipping point in the pushback? No, not yet. But I think we are moving toward that. And I think we're going to be victorious. I do, because I think common sense is going to prevail.
Well, I hope that you're right, Kate, because we don't have too many more steps beyond this next election. What we're seeing is kind of a tyranny that's going on in America right now where people are even scared to speak out. You've seen certainly, and we talk to people up in Fairfax who've spoken out at school board meetings, who've been gone after by the FBI. If the leftists, the next gen Marxists, are holding all of the seats of power, how do we get people past being intimidated?
That is an important point. You know, the weaponization of our Justice Department is a really frightening thing. But all I can say, you know, and this comes from my years of experience with Central and Eastern Europe. So when the Berlin Wall fell, I started traveling to Eastern Europe and I interviewed people extensively about life under communism and then overthrowing communism. And I tell you, this the single greatest lesson was you have to stand up to it. And it was the fact that people bowed down to it and went along with the lies and sort of gave into their fear. That was why it was able to go on for as long as it did. And all I can say to people is, if you care anything for freedom, if you care anything for the ideals on which this country was founded, you just have to put your fear aside and stand up to it. And I will tell you, you know, my husband and I both went into the Trump administration. We were attacked just mercilessly. I think at one point he had there within a 3-month period, there were 400 attack articles written about him and plenty about me as well. But you know what we both realized after we sort of got over the initial shock is it doesn't actually touch you. It doesn't, you know, your life still goes on. Your family's still your family. Your friends are still your friends. And it's like, we've let them bully us and we have to stop that.
One of the things you bring up in your book, which is so important, is that the left, the next gen Marxists and the original Marxists kicked God out and trusting in man. We saw a very interesting manifestation of this. I think it was in one of the Obama nominations when they said we're taking God out of the platform, and it was rousing cheers following. So tell us why that's an important component of this.
Yeah, that was a very important piece that I talk about in the book. In fact, really the whole opening chapter is tracing that process. So it goes back farther than Marx. It really goes back to Galileo and others. And it's very, very important. Without that, without the effort to take God down off his pedestal and put man up in his place, you wouldn't have Marx, you wouldn't have Marxism. I think you wouldn't have the evil that you see today to the degree that you do. Don't forget, as Christians, you know, we also believe evil is ever present, just happens to take this shape right now. You know, even if this process hadn't happened, you still wouldn't eradicate evil. But I would say this is the shape of evil today.
And I have seen the replacement of God with a small g god of government. And people seem to worship the government as if this is the provider.
And not only the provider, but I think the other kind of mistake that people make is to think that government is all-knowing the way God is all-knowing, right? One of the things that I love the most is the African-American economist Thomas Sowell talking about his own transformation from being a socialist and a Marxist when he was at the University of Chicago to then going to work for government. And it was when he went to work for government that he finally realized, oh my gosh, no way can we expect them to solve anything, right? You know, it's also kind of partly why I laugh a little bit when people ascribe like crazy conspiracies to government, because honestly, if you've worked in government, you realize, you know, most of the people who were there are just normal, average, mediocre people, right? I don't think they're capable of pulling off these, you know, wild conspiracies. Are they capable of doing terrible things? Yes. To go back to your original point, it is a real mistake to think that government has the knowledge, the skill, the organization, the efficiency to solve all of our problems.
The Shilling Show Unleashed podcast continues in a moment. Our guest is Kate Gorka, and the book is Next Gen Marxism.
Shilling Show Unleashed.
ShillingShowMedia.com is your one-stop shop for websites, audio and video production, and photography.
ShillingShowMedia.com will take your project from conception to completion.
ShillingShowMedia.com is reasonably priced and highly professional.
Need a website for your business? Visit ShillingShowMedia.com.
Need a video created or edited? Visit ShillingShowMedia.com.
Have a photography or graphic design project? Visit ShillingShowMedia.com.
ShillingShowMedia.com is your one-stop shop for websites, audio and video production, and photography.
Visit ShillingShowMedia.com. That's ShillingShowMedia.com.
Shilling Show Unleashed.
We continue now on the Shilling Show Unleashed podcast with Kate Gorka, who along with Mike Gonzalez has written Next Gen Marxism, What It Is and How to Combat It. So I think there's a lot we can learn from the examples you bring forward in the book and Italy and Germany. And I think most Americans are completely detached from this history. So maybe you could give us a little background.
Part of what happened is that when the Bolshevik Revolution succeeded in Russia, it inspired socialists around the world, honestly. It was a great push and inspiration to the socialists in the United States, as well as to Germany and Italy. And Germany and Italy both came very close to having successful full-scale communist takeovers. But at the last minute, they failed. They're just weren't sufficient numbers amongst the workers. They ultimately decided they didn't want to overthrow their systems. They wanted to just reform them gradually. The reason this is so important for us today is because it was out of those failures that we are seeing what we are seeing today. So two things happened. In Italy, one of the leaders of the revolution was Antonio Gramsci. And he was eventually put in prison, where he had 9 years to think about why did their revolution fail. And he came up with a whole theory, a theory of cultural Marxism, where he said the way to achieve the revolution is not through violence, but it's through cultural change. We need to get into the institutions, the cultural institutions, and change the way people think. That has become incredibly influential, and that is basically what happened over the subsequent decades. But Germany was very important to today as well, because again, what happened there, you had leaders in the German Revolution who had to flee, who then basically created a whole school, the Frankfurt School, to study why had their socialist revolution failed. And they developed whole theories around it. And then what did they do? They came to the United States. And what I find so kind of sadly ironic, especially in light of what we've been seeing the last few days at Columbia University, that the crazy violence and what's been going on, the anti-Jewish activity, who gave them a home? Columbia University. So Columbia has been, you know, one of the real hotbeds of this radicalism, both in the 50s, in the 60s, and now we're seeing it manifest today as well.
Yeah, and this is so disturbing because we've got it here at the University of Virginia, and there's one particular student who has been singled out for a persecution because he's Jewish. And yet the administration seems to be almost powerless, or chooses to be powerless. They let this go on. And I realize in looking across the country, Kate, that this is broad. There are a lot of people at these protests and they are very widespread.
I agree. And I think it's incredibly frightening. And I do not understand what is wrong with these universities that they are allowing this to go on. All of us as Americans should be deeply disturbed and upset. And, you know, I'm just surprised we're not seeing more protests from everyday Americans. You know, I was listening to the stories of the Jewish, she's a journalist, the one at Columbia who got kind of stabbed in the eye with a Palestinian yes. flag. And just listening to her stories about what's happening on the Columbia campus, we should be profoundly alarmed. And yet we're not. Like, our, you know, parents are still writing those $70,000 a year checks to send their kids to these institutions of indoctrination.
I want to talk somewhat about Bill Ayers, because this is an important piece in the puzzle going back a few decades, but really relevant up until today, and his association with Barack Obama. So tell us about him.
Very important figure. I mean, and another one we just have to mention is Saul Alinsky. We spend a lot of time talking about Bill Ayers in the book because, you know, to me, one of the most ridiculous things is that we've kind of deified Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn. You would be hard-pressed to find two more evil, just reprehensible human beings. There's one quick story where there was, you know, at one of the big meetings in Chicago, right after the murders, the Charles Manson murders. And, you know, if you remember, this is really gruesome, but one of the things that happened is that the pregnant woman, Sharon Tate, was stabbed in the stomach, in her pregnant belly with a fork and murdered. And Bernadine Dorn at this meeting, Bill Ayers' wife, holds up three fingers to mimic the fork. That was the salute of Bernadine Dorn and Bill Ayers. I mean, it's just so atrocious. But Look, the important thing is the revolutionary movement here in the United States was with the students, right? The radical students in the 1960s. But again, they get to the end of the 1960s and they say, well, you know, our revolution has failed. We haven't managed to end the war in Vietnam. That was one of the things they wanted. And they said that they hadn't brought about the civil rights reforms that they wanted, which A in itself, I think, isn't entirely true. But anyway, so they kind of went three directions, right? One was they said we weren't radical enough. And they formed the Weather Underground, which became a terrorist organization. That was Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn. That's what they did. You know, many people today forget or never knew that in those early 70s, we had as many as 2,000 bombings a year in this country from domestic terrorists, such as the Weather Underground. It was a very, very violent time. But the other two groups, you had another group that said, no, we're going to bring about the revolution by going into the universities and bringing about change that way. And then a third group said, no, and this is kind of taking a page out of the Lenin's playbook and then also Saul Alinsky's. And they worked with Saul Alinsky. They said, no, what we really need to do is organize. We need to teach organizing. We need to organize people to bring about a revolution. One of those groups, they formed something called the Midwest Training Academy. 50 years later, it's still going. And who was one of their beneficiaries? Barack Obama. Bill Ayers has been a very important figure. You know, when they finally came out of the Weather Underground, they were feted and celebrated. I mean, he had incredible responsibilities. He received awards from the mayor of Chicago for his contributions to education. And he went into the university and he received tenure. They've become sort of heroes. And I think this is just one of the biggest fallacies, one of the biggest just insanities that we would celebrate two such evil people.
I want to get to one more thing before we look at some of the solutions that you propose, and that is the attack on the family and the sexualization of children, which is just almost unfathomable if we look back just a few years, the things that are going on in schools today.
It was truly one of the biggest motivators for us to write the books. When I left the Trump administration and went over to the Heritage Foundation, it happened to coincide with the COVID shutdowns. I got there just a few weeks before the COVID shutdowns, and so that was the beginning of the parent, you know, sort of the great parent awakening. And so my work kind of quickly pivoted to that. I started traveling around the country working with many of these nascent parent groups, because as you know, during COVID is when parents started really waking up yes. to what their children were being taught and the kind of content that was being presented to their children. During that time, Mike and I kept running into each other at Heritage and we kept talking about this. Like, we just could not believe what was going on in the schools. And so that was sort of a big motivation for writing the book. The chapter on the sexualization of children, I think, is one of the most interesting in the book, because it really traces how sexuality has been an obsession of the utopians from the very beginning. And Marx, of course, is one variety of utopianism. It's so prevalent. Like, what we found was that basically every utopian was themselves a sexual deviant. None of them stayed faithful to their spouse. I mean, Rousseau, you know, his kids all ended up in orphanages. Marx was one of the most just disgusting human beings, you know, cheating on his wife, impregnating the nanny, treating his children terribly, and on down the line. There's a whole line of them for whom this is true. To the point that it really got me to thinking that these ideologies are actually constructed around a need to justify destroying sexual morality. Yes, Marx presented an economic worldview, but he was also very focused on you have to destroy the family. You have to destroy sexual morality. In the Communist Manifesto, what he argues for is let's get rid of marriage. We just want to have a community of women available to men for their whatever pleasure and being taken care of. So the fact that we have arrived at a place where children are on the front line of this culture war, honestly, it makes perfect sense, you know, when you look back through the history. And I think that this is one of the most important things for people to understand, because there are too many parents out there right now who think that they are doing the right thing by supporting their child's, quote, you know, gender confusion. No way. I am sorry, but no way. They have been seduced by this, you know, destructive ideology. They need to understand its roots, and they need to stand firm against this really insidious ideology.
In the final chapter, and we're talking about saving America, and one of the key points that you make, Kate, is knowing who we are. In other words, we can't be America unless we know what America is. And I'm concerned that this generation that's being brought up in the present day government schools is completely disconnected from reality. So how do we reclaim that?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think it's one of the most important things, too. You know, when I first went over to Heritage, the very first thing I got involved with was pushing back on that New York Times effort, the 1619 Project. Yes. So if you remember, this was Nicole Hannah Jones, and it was a whole issue of the New York Times magazine. And then it's become books and movies and all kinds of stuff telling us that we're systemically racist, and actually presenting a lot of historical falsehoods, outright falsehoods. Part of the way we were trying to push back against that was working to restore the teaching of American history and civics. And I want to tell you, those subjects have been decimated in our schools. And this is just such a big problem. And I'm sad to say, it's not just the kids who are lacking this education, but it's many adults. But again, you know, I always come back to a kind of optimism, because what I see is many, many adults now kind of recognizing this and going back to a sort of self-education. You know, there are all kinds of different groups that are coming together to relearn our history. But I'm telling you, I think this is one of the best and most important things that we can do as adults. And then we in turn teach our children. I just also really hope that this movement to either reject the public schools or to get involved and change the public schools, this has to continue. One of the great hopes for our country is the homeschoolers and the classical schools. They remain a small percentage of the education that children are receiving. And that is frightening. That is something that is, I think, a real threat to our future.
Kate Gorka, if people would like to get a copy of your new book, Next Gen Marxism, or to follow your work online, tell us how we can do that.
Well, I always love to support local bookstores, as long as they're not revolutionary bookstores. So I always say, go order it from a local bookstore. And then in a worst case, order it from Amazon. I have a website, katiegorka.org. I'm on Facebook as Catherine Gorka. Lots of ways to follow me and find me.
Kate Gorka, thank you so much for joining us today on the Shilling Show Unleashed podcast and for writing a terrific book. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
That concludes another edition of the Shilling Show Unleashed podcast. Visit us online at shillingshow.com, where you can directly support this podcast by clicking on the Patreon banner at the top of the page and making a monthly donation. Your support is essential for the continuation of the Shilling Show Unleashed podcast. Until next time.